helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:08 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday, I'm joined right here on the Home and Garden Show by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti, 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on HGTV as the house detective, and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you, your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. 340-1045, 340-1045. And if you're calling from Savannah,
Georgia, you like that town lately.
Yeah, we're doing some business up there, so I've been spending some time. 904-340-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yes, Tiny Tim.
Here come the big three things on my mind.
Oh, no.
Here we go,
those
bro.
Those are the only big things about you. Okay.
Done? Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Pecs.
Okay.
Cool lights and duct sweat.
Duct sweat. Okay.
Pecs piping. You know, it seems about every generation we come up with a great idea on what pipe we should use to distribute water through our house.
Uh-huh.
Far back as the Romans, they thought lead was a good idea. That didn't play out.
No, didn't.
Later we went to galvanized steel. That played out reasonably well.
Yeah.
Then we went to copper. That played out a little bit better. Then we went to polybutylene pipe. That didn't play out so well at all. Mm-hmm. Now, most commonly, what we're seeing is CPVC. The pipe that is now across the country deemed to be the right best opportunity is known as PEX, P-E-X. Mm-hmm. It's an elaborate plastic, and that P-E-X stands for that. It's a cross-polymer, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. The pipe is fantastic. The pipe has a compression fitting that is in and of itself, so the joints are perfect. It can snake through things. It's not rigid like a copper pipe. It's much more pliable. It's not as pliable as a garden hose, but it's getting close. What that allows it to do in a repipe scenario, like if you need new pipe in your house, rather than have to cut giant holes everywhere to get the pipe in the right place, they can actually snake it through almost like a wire.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really great stuff. The pipe itself, the material, slightly more expensive, the labor, because of the way they can snake it, is considerably less.
So it balances it out.
It balances it out, and there are a relatively small number of companies in our area who have yet embraced it and learned to do it well. Across the country, they've been using this stuff for 15 or 20 years. It's just been slow here. You know the guys at Bill Fenwick as an example. They're doing it. There's just a couple other guys doing it. But if you're in need of a repipe, you really should give some thought to PEX. P-E-X, and you want to be sure that the plumber is an authorized user of the material. It takes some special tools, and if they don't have those, it doesn't go so well. So PEX pipe. Next up is cool lights. You may have noticed it is hot outside.
Yes,
and
a little bit.
Yes, in a quest to keep it cooler inside of our house at a lower expense. Imagine this. You're in your kitchen. And so many people in your kitchen, it's the most intensely lit or lighted room in the house. So a lot of people have those can lights. Some might have 12 or 15 right. can lights up there, and they stick these 120-watt incandescent bulbs up there. If you have 10 of those things, that's 1,200 watts. That's the same as a hairdryer. Not that I use a hairdryer, but I read on the back of it. It's like a hairdryer up there, and you can't figure out why it's so hot in the kitchen.
Or just blowing in there all the time.
That's exactly. Yeah, you're producing all this heat because of light, same at your dining table. If you have not already made the transition away from Thomas Edison's original light bulb, that, you know, worked good for 120 years. If you've not transitioned to the LED,
yes.
In those areas where you'd like to be cooler, your dining room table, your kitchen, I have them adjacent to my reading chair so you don't have that hot bulb next to you. Think about that. You can be more comfortable, and you'll save a little bit of money along the way. But mostly I'm about comfort.
I know that for sure.
Though I'm also frugal.
Yeah, well.
I should get a show just on frugal comfort.
Frugal comfort, okay.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Next is duck sweat.
Duck sweat. Is that, you know, duck sweat? I didn't think they sweat.
No, not ducks in the pond. Okay. Air conditioning ducts.
Okay.
It's D-U-C-T.
Okay.
As opposed to, good question, though.
Yeah.
D-U-C-K. So duck. Air conditioning duct sweat.
Okay, got that.
At Home Pro, we troubleshoot lots and lots of ceiling stains. That's one of the more common things we're asked to do that doesn't involve a purchase of a house. So we get out there with the infrared, and we travel around and look for it. When a person sees a stain on their ceiling, the first thing that comes to mind is roof.
Roof, right.
There you go. And the next thing that comes to mind, if it's a two-story, oh, it must be plumbing related.
Right.
A very common source of staining on your ceiling inside your home.
Especially now.
Yep, is duct sweat.
Mm.
The closer that duct runs to the outside wall, the more likely it is to sweat. Here's what happens.
If you get a leak, does it cause it to sweat?
A leak in the duct itself?
Yeah,
Generally, no.
Oh, okay. What about those old, you know, metal ducts?
Much more common sweat problem.
Okay.
Although in the houses at that age, they rarely ran the duct along the outside wall.
Or they ran it in the middle.
Right. They ran it in the middle.
Mine's in the middle.
We do goofy stuff now when we design houses.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine this. There's this, the duct, let's say it's your master bedroom, and you got all this cool configuration going on, and the duct, the air conditioning duct is running near to the soffit, near to the outside wall. Well, that duct is cold. It's about 55 degrees inside that temperature. And a day like it's going to be today, like it's been all week, it could be 95 or 100 or more when you consider the heat of the roofing application to the heat. So that very warm, moist air, let's make it 90 degrees or 95 degrees and 90% humidity, it rolls through that soffit screen like it's supposed to, and then it rolls across that cool duct. And when it does that, it dips below the dew point and it sweats.
Right.
So if you're seeing, just another thing to think about, when you see a stain that's near an outside wall, take a look at where your registers are for your heating and air. It could very well be duct sweat.
Talking about sweating, you know, what about sweating vents?
Yeah, very similar thing. It's that same warm, moist air. And usually when the vent is sweating, it's because the duct isn't properly pulled over the register termination point, that metal where
some
it
of that,
connects.
So that warm, humid air is
it hits
mixed.
That. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what the solution there is to ensure it's well insulated. Foam does a beautiful job of that.
That crazy stuff. The
crazy foam or whatever you like to use.
Right, right.
The deal of it is if there's no temperature change at the exterior of that, it's called a duct boot.
Metal boot.
Okay. If there's no temperature change there between the duct boot and the attic, it won't sweat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Next time I'm up there, I'll take a look.
Yeah, or, you know, Home Pro will do that for you.
Oh, okay.
I'd give you a brother-in-law deal.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Okay.
$1,000 an hour.
$1,000 an hour. Yeah. Talking about heat, you know, how to get cooled in the summer. You know, it's supposed to be hot now. It's summer. But, you know, pergolas are a great addition to any garden landscape, especially in the morning or in the evening when you're sitting out there and get a little bit of the sun, or even in the afternoon. Barbecue pit, they're a little expensive. They can run, you know, gamut of prices. It just depends on the fastening and the carpentry, type of carpentry you use. You know, you can have pergolas where you can virtually assemble them and they don't really need screws, you know, but, you know, screwing in is always a safe thing to do. I'm not recommending, especially when our high wind areas.
Yeah, I love bolts and screws.
You know, pergolas, you can make them screened. You can have a screened-in pergola. If bugs are an issue in your area, we've screened in the pergolas. But one of the main things is you want to reduce the sunlight, you know, and get under the shade. And that's what the pergolas have been in existence. The Thebes had pergolas, you know, to get out from the sun.
I was in Kenya a while ago, a long while ago. I was in Kenya, and there was a big pergola.
Yes.
And at the apex or the peak of the roof, you know, it was a round pergola-looking thing. It had a big hole and had a barbecue pit in the center of it, and it discharged the heat and smoke through the center.
Yeah.
Could you build one of those?
Yeah, we could build one of those. Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah, because you don't want to burn the thing down when you're using
it. No, no.
But here's a great idea. You know, screening in, of course, is a great idea. Then vines. You know, I love clematis. One of the best vines to put over a pergola is clematis paniculata, which is a sweet autumn. It's a fall bloomer. Wisteria is a great vine to put on a pergola to increase the shade.
Yeah.
Or if you don't
want
the
general coolness as it aspirates.
Right, exactly. That's a good point. The Cherokee rose, our native rose, is a big rose. It has also beautiful flowers. It's very disease resistant.
Can we get honeysuckle to work?
Honeysuckle, there's a plethora of vines that would go, or you can put on a pergola that look good. And honeysuckle, the Japanese hive, is very, very fragrant. Very sweet fragrance.
Yeah.
But if you did, you want to go a little more low maintenance, you don't want to do the gardening thing, you can actually get a shade screen attached to a pergola. It's very simple. You could do it as a homeowner or have it done.
Like a shade cloth?
Right, a shade cloth. Yeah. And what you do is you attach two cables right and left side, and you go right and left side, just attach them, tighten them down, and then you get your measure out your shade cloth. You're going to have to take it to a seamstress, get it sewn up, and you attach little metal rings to there, and you can slide it back and forth. If you want it to be a little nicer, you want to put a spline or something rigid in there about every 2 feet or every foot.
Give it a nice tight look.
It will give you a nice tight look. But those can be slid open and slid closed. And it's fairly inexpensive. Mm-hmm. You know, you can use any fabric. You can use something upholstery fabric, but it's not going to last as long if you use sun fabric. But it's a great way to add that shade, and you can make it colorful with anything you want there. And if you wanted something a little more artsy and beautiful, you can put the sun fabric on the outside and then have a liner of the nicer fabric in the inside.
I like it. Sounds beautiful. It's 720 here at News 104.5 WOKV. Brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 340-1045. When we come back, how to find an arborist you can trust. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 726 here at News 104.5. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, along with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Joining us from the south side is Dale, who's in need of an arborist. Dale, what do you need the arborist for?
Well, first of all, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And, Larry, how do you spell O'Neill? Is it N-E-A-L or something
I-L.
Else? N-E-I-L.
N-E-I-L, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, I know Duval County for many years would have a lot of agriculture people. Do they have an arborist?
An arborist to the Duval County Extension Service?
Yes, they do.
They do. Figert is his name, and you can call and get him. He can come out and look at your trees if you had a question on your trees.
Oh, what did you say his name is?
Larry Figert. I think that's how I pronounce it, Figert. Yeah. But they do have an arborist that works for the Duval County Extension Service.
And you say Larry Bayard?
Figert.
Oh, well, I'm not understanding.
F-I-G-U-A-R-T, I think is how you spell it. But
how about I give you the phone number? Would that help
you? Give you the phone number. We'll give you the phone number.
That'd be good also. So, Larry, yourself, you don't do that.
We do. But, you know, if you want this guy's free, you know. He'll come out and look at your tree. You know what I mean? And we do the treatment and the cutting and the trimming and stuff. We can do that. But,
great.
You know, if you need us, of course, you can call us. We'll be glad to come out and try to see what the problem is. What is the problem that you're having with your tree?
Well, somebody thought the tree is dead. But 6 months ago, we had it professionally trimmed. And it's all sprouted out. I just didn't want to get in an argument. I have not spoken with the person personally myself, But I thought, well, heck, if I have an arborist say, well, that tree is definitely very much alive. It's not dying, and it's all sprouted out up and down the entire trunk. So.
Yes. It looks like it's alive.
I can tell you from here it's alive.
It's alive. It's alive.
It's alive.
I don't even need to look. If it's all sprouted out, it's alive. You know what I mean? It's
yes.
If you got green leaves, it's alive, man.
Yep. One of the indicators of a live tree is sprouting of leaves.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be a brain surgeon, even though sometimes people want, you know what, they want to support their argument and they have to go against science, reason, and logic, you know what I mean?
Because their own eyeballs.
And their own eyeballs because they want to support their argument. And I find that a frequent thing of human nature. But, you know, if it's got green leaves, ma'am, it's alive.
Yes, sir. Larry with the Extension Service, y'all have his phone number?
Yep, here it comes.
Yes.
This is the main line right into the Duval Extension up on McDuff.
Yes.
387-8850. And again, one more time, 387-8850. It's 7:30 here at News 104.5, Fox News Traffic, Weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 340-1045. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:36. Reminder, need a large landscaper, easy to find all the time, larrysgarden.com. Got the blog, video, frequently asked questions. Larry also has, thank you to Alexander Graham Bell, followed
yes.
up by Steve Jobs, a cell phone, or a telephone.
Apple's floundering.
Here comes your phone number. Never talk when I'm attempting to
give
out your phone number.
I'm being quiet.
I'll start giving out mine instead.
Okay.
346-1970, 346-1970, larrysgarden.com. Me, Wally Conway, easy to find all the time online. GoHomePro.com, GoHomePro.com. Everything you need there for due diligence on residential buildings, commercial buildings, environmental sampling. If you need it, we likely have it, or we'll also refer you to the right person. GoHomePro.com. Phone number, here we go, 268-8211, and operators are standing by all day, every day, to take great care of you, and we're very grateful for that help. All righty, over to Harry in St. Augustine, sharing some thoughts on tankless water heaters. Welcome, Harry.
Good morning. I'm trying to figure out, is it worth it to invest in a tankless hot water heater, or should I just bypass and go with solar?
Well, let me ask you, why are you thinking about a tankless? What benefit do you hope to gain over a conventional water heater with a nice big tank? What are you looking to gain?
Instant hot water, for one. Number two, I have two hot water heaters now because of the size of the structure. And I'm thinking if I go to a tankless, I'll save some money from the regular hot water heater.
All righty. So, a few things. The hot water doesn't get to you any faster because you have a tankless water heater. So the idea that it will be instantly hot at your shower or your sink, it doesn't change that at all. So it'll have no impact on that unless you move the water heater closer to where you're using it. So generally that serves you no purpose. Let's talk about saving money. Do you have gas available?
I do.
Okay. Is your present water heater gas or electric?
Electric.
Okay. So you'll be running gas lines. The difference between changing from the same type tank that you have and changing this now to a gas water heater is probably quadruple the cost. And the question becomes, over time, will you recoup that? And the answer to that is maybe or maybe not, depending on your water consumption and depending on how the variance in gas prices blends out with the changes in electric prices. So based on what you've said, I don't really see the advantage to you to changing.
Okay, and how about just solar?
Solar?
Yes.
Solar is really falling from popularity. It truly has. The reason solar water heat has fallen from popularity is the expense of solar electric continues to decline. And it's kind of crossed itself on the graph where if you said, hey, I want some solar capacity for whatever reason you did, it's really gotten to the point that most people are making decision, I will turn the solar into electric, and then I can use the electric to heat water, to run air conditioning, or do whatever I want. So it's pretty well fallen from favor. There are the number of solar water heat installs has dropped dramatically, while the number of solar electric installs continues to rise.
Okay.
So if it's about saving money, it's not happening in my checkbook.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave it alone.
All right. Enjoy the hot shower.
All right.
Bye, sir. I'll tell you another thing. My my water heater is out in the garage, as are many people's. Mm-hmm. And this time of year, if your garage is 95 degrees,
your heating bill's going up.
Yeah. It's that water stays quite warm in the tank. You could just about bathe at 95 degrees. Most people bathe at about 101, 102. So in 95, you would consider tempered. It's below body temperature, you know. But it doesn't take very much energy to boost it up another 10 or 15 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
When water heat gets incredibly expensive,
it's icy outside.
Yeah.
And your water heater's outside.
That's relatively rare.
Well,
I'll tell you a funny thing.
A detached garage, you know what I mean?
So when your water pipes are underground, depending on where you live, like if you live in Minnesota, they bury them deeper than they do here so they don't freeze. So generally that water comes out of the ground at about 65 degrees no matter where you live.
Right.
People like me who have an aerator, right, a big tank that collects the water so it can aerate, our water in winter drops down to the air temperature. So if it's 35 degrees,
so you got ice water coming out there.
Yeah. So we actually have a greater expense of heating in the wintertime, heating water, than a person who lives in a cold place. Mm-hmm. Conversely, in the summertime, if that aerator is sitting out there all day, that water is heating up to, you know, 90 degrees. So it's interesting when people make generalizations about the expense of various modalities of heating water and this and that. They don't really consider, well, where did the water come from? Did it get aerated first? All these other things. And those are the kind of things that make an actual difference in your satisfaction if they're not factored in.
Right.
So anyway, that's
If you're out there planting grass this time of year, you know a lot of people out there working on their grass, you know, because grass is a big issue now, mowing, treating. There's a lot of bare spots, or you're installing a new lawn. One of the things that people really make a mistake on, you know, you want to water frequently, of course, when you're when you have a new lawn, because you want it to get established. We continually run into people who are watering 3 to 4 times a day when they have a new lawn. That's only going to do one thing. It's going to get your lawn in a high level of fungus infestation, and it's going to rot it out. So, you know, you want to water one time, you know, really well, and then water every day one time well.
Early in the morning before the
soak it in. If you are depending on rainfall, then you better make sure that you have an accurate way to measure it, because a lot of times you get a little bit of drizzle, you think it's enough, and it's not. Okay,
not getting down to the root.
You
got to
have an accurate way to measure. So watering your lawn, you know, 3 to 4 times a day when you have a freshly planted lawn is going to end it. It's going to be a sad ending.
It's expensive.
You're going to be redoing it again. Grass is almost doubled in price. And
why is that?
Because all this building boom, you know, everybody wants grass.
Huh.
You know, all those years ago, all those
sod farms
turned into vegetable gardens. You know, they've changed their, you know, when they weren't selling sod 5 years ago, they had to do something else, you know, so they made them into vegetables.
The sod farm used to be down on State Road 16, turned into a strip mall.
Yeah, strip mall. Well, you know, that's it. The property becomes valuable.
You know, there was an airport out there at one point?
No kidding.
Yeah. Back when it, even before it was a sod farm, we're going back 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Before it was a sod farm, it was a real working farm with, you know, whatever whatever was growing. It had an airstrip in the center and a little farmer's fruit and veggie stand out front. So you could fly in, get your veggies, and leave.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's cool.
Now it's a strip mall.
And then another thing right now where, you know, you're out there working on the yard, you have to be careful when these temperatures are getting, even though like Celsius is not heat restricted, but you know when you're getting in 95, 98 degrees, the temperature is always taken in the shade too. So Remember that. So when if it's 95 in the shade, it's 100 outside, you know, 100 outstanding outside. You want to make sure that your grass is well watered, and you want to make sure if you're going to apply herbicide that you do it during the cool time of the day or day which is going to be predictably, you know, cooler. You know, the weather forecast comes from for a cooling trend. When you apply herbicide, and of course it's not, we're getting plenty of rainfall now, and the grass is dry and you got high temperature, you're going to have a negative result. You know, so apply an herbicide, check the temperature, make sure the grass is well watered. Try to apply when the temperature is on a lower temperature. You know, we're going into a cooling trend.
Great. Hey, right. I've got a tip for you.
What's that?
If you have a Maserati,
right,
a beautiful red convertible 2003 Maserati, you got a picture on that? Would you want water spots on your Maserati?
No.
Here's an interesting thing. I got this from the guys at Affordable Water.
Yeah.
Sometimes people advocate, you know, being able to wash your car without soap because it leaves a residue.
Right, right.
And water leaves the spots. If you have a water softener, the water's nice and soft. This doesn't work if you only wash your car every 6 months. This is for folks that like to keep the car nice, okay? With a water softener, you just spray the car, right? And you get your chamois mitt, and you just massage your Maserati, which is a joyous thing to do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Turn the engine on, too, when you're doing it so you hear the exhaust.
Yes. Oh, that's a beautiful sound. Then you spray it again, which is removing that little bit of dirt, and it's removing the things that you've loosened with as your hand chamoying your Maserati.
Right.
And then you take your backpack blower.
Oh.
And you blow that baby off.
Yeah, air dried.
Yeah, that gets like, you know how around like door handles and windows
that?
It blow it behind the name badges.
You use your backpack blower to blow air dry your car?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Just
Tanya has
wash.
A black Thunderbird, one of those O2s.
It's
only got like 30,000 miles on it.
Uh-huh.
And this is how I do it. I hand rub it just with just water.
Just
no
water.
Soap, no soap. Detergent, no nothing. And then hit it with a backpack blower, and it blows all the water off so you don't get those little water streaks that leave
a
mark.
Right, right. Even though you wipe it down, when you move, that little they come out. Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Or when you drive the car, if it hasn't all the way dried, it blows water from like around where the hood goes down and all that, and it leaves streaks. So if you would like to have the cleanest, shiniest car without soap and buffer, you may need to buff it the first time you get it right.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way to keep it super shiny, bright, without streaks and spots is to have softened water.
Yes.
And a blower.
Uh-huh.
And a chamois mitt on your hand as you rub that baby.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you can fix it so the exhaust gets more elevated the more you rub it.
Well, that's one of the things, you know. Say if you had a Tesla or a Maserati or a Corvette or a Jaguar, the electric cars have no cool sound.
Oh no!
Though you can buy inside the cockpit, you can make it sound like you have a real car.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing like the exhaust sound of a Maserati or a Ferrari. You know, they have great, great exhaust.
So now people in their sports cars all over town are going to be going over to Quarry Road, Affordable Water, and they'll be saying, "Hey, man, would you mind spritzing my Maserati for me?"
Yeah.
Well, I think Mark would accept that. He would probably do that.
That's a great idea.
We should
idea.
Set him up to have a car rally. Show up in his parking
lot. Oh, a car wash? Car wash rally?
Yeah.
A car rally with car wash included.
Yeah, but would you restrict what type cars could be there?
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't show up in your Astro van.
Right. Oh.
That wouldn't count.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the same. Yeah, that wouldn't be the same. But, you know, using what you have in your landscape to make it look better. Let's say if you have one of these ponds, I saw a really artful use by a homeowner. The artful use of their ponds, you know, it had they planted some bald cypress.
Artful use of the pond.
Of the pond, yes. They had planted a lot of bald cypress, which were beautiful, and then it shaded that area. And then they planted some of our native irises there, and they're very, very low maintenance. So in the spring, they produce a
nice
beautiful
flower,
and they need no care. And then you have that beautiful foliage during the summer. You know, it's a very inexpensive way to use a landscape.
I like that.
to really improve it. It's just a,
that requires few, no few, care, few, got my attention.
Just no care, no care. Yeah. Just get out there one time, plant the irises, and you can plant them small, and they'll grow rapidly. And you need to plant maybe 100, 150, maybe 300 that, in order to have some impact. You know, you just don't want to plant one. You know.
Can I tell you how I got interested in the Maserati?
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, we have this at Home Pro Inspection, the 18-month warranty. We're one of 200 or 300 dealers in the whole country that have access to this product.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy that owns the company has a Maserati.
What color? Red?
Red.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said to us last week that over the person with the largest number of sales over the next year is going to give them a Maserati.
What model?
It's a 2003 with 28,000 miles. It's a convertible. It's got some Italian name.
Can I carry the warranty?
It's gorgeous.
I may become a warranty salesman.
Yeah.
Can I wear?
So no one really wants a 12-month warranty. Everyone wants an 18-month warranty. True, right? Mm-hmm. Why would you want to?
Is it a convertible?
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
God. Oh, my God.
I'll get a picture and I'll stick it on my Facebook page.
You could finally get rid of that Fanta can.
My MG Midget.
You know,
it would be tough to let go of.
But
to swap my orange MG Midget for a red Maserati.
It would be moving outside. Okay, you don't have to get rid of it, but the garage would be the Maserati.
Just something to think about.
Right.
Yeah. It's 7:51 here at News 104.5. Brief break, right back to you. Appreciate you being with us. Stay a little longer. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:56. Reminder, you can find Larry, larrysgarden.com, or 346-1970 for Home Pro inspections. Go, homepro.com, or 268-8211. Coming up on a nice weekend and the 4th of July makes me think of watermelon.
Watermelons, yes.
You
can plant them right now.
Yes, and I have found an amazing watermelon.
What's
you
that?
May or may not be familiar
and
with.
And watermelon rind is very nutritious. You know that? It's very nutritious.
Pickled watermelon rind.
Is very, very nutritious.
Yep. Have you heard of or familiar with the Bradford watermelon?
No, I've never heard of that one.
Turns out there was a family, they're still there, the Bradfords in South Carolina, who are famous for producing a varietal of watermelon that their family over 5 or 6 generations hybridized.
Right.
The Bradford watermelon is said to be the sweetest, luscious, most delicious watermelon on the planet. The downside is it doesn't ship worth a darn.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
It, you know, watermelons, they
put them in truck. You'll have to go to Bradford in South Carolina.
Or raise them yourself.
Right.
It's been 175 years in the Bradford family.
What about the seeds? Where do you get the seeds at?
From them.
Oh, you had to mail order from them. Okay,
yep, Bradford watermelon. It's really interesting.
It's the sweetest. Okay, yeah, a lot of fruit. You know, a lot of fruit, they're very, very, very good. Cannot be sold in supermarkets because they don't ship and they don't
store.
Same
with bananas. We Cavendish bananas?
Right.
Because they ship so well. There's actually many bananas that are significantly sweeter and nicer that don't ship.
Right.
So 175 years ago, Sumter, South Carolina.
That's where they started the Civil War.
Yeah, well, they were actually fighting over watermelon.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, as it turns out.
That's a reasonable expectation.
Yep. So they were doing great. Raising these things and selling them all local. When the railroads came, they tried to ship them around. They didn't ship worth a crap, so they stopped being able to do that.
Right.
The family kind of got away from thinking about it as a commercial crop. They just lost interest. Uh-huh. And it wasn't until 2012 that, like, the great-great-great-grandson of the original
planted a seed. He says, oh, my gosh.
Well, they were kind of wild in a sense.
Just
but now
wild,
they're recultivating. So if you're going on the 4th of July up 95, stop off in Sumter and get yourself a Bradford watermelon.
Yes.
7:58. Grateful that you were with us. Be safe on the 4th of July. Don't be that knucklehead in the emergency room. Use your turn signal.